Welcome to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? How does it differ from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I interview homeschooling families across the country to unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. Welcome. Here with us today, we have Liz from Idaho. Liz, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, I'm so glad to be here.
I'm going to start out by asking you how many kids you have and their ages, and then just kind of get into what brought you into the homeschooling community.
Awesome. So I have one son, and he is 12. He's in sixth grade this year. And I am like so many people that I never thought I would homeschool. The midwife that taught some of my birthing classes had mentioned she homeschooled and her daughter was a Rhodes Scholar and living in London. And that kind of just piqued my interest, you know, early on. But still, you know, you just never think I'm going to homeschool my children.
Right.
But then as he was getting into looking at kindergarten, I just wasn't sure he'd be able to sit in a chair all day. And also just, you know, I would rather be the biggest influence in his life. I felt like sending him away. So I think that's pretty typical. My husband was kind of against homeschooling. And so we kind of made a deal that like if he had an October birthday. And so we kind of made the deal that he wouldn't be able to go to kindergarten because he missed the deadline. So why don't we do kindergarten homeschooling? And if it worked out, then we'll keep going. And if it didn't work out, then I was going to send him to kindergarten. He wouldn't be any worse off, I guess. So.
Oh, great. Okay. So yeah, you could have done kindergarten that year. And if he didn't learn anything, if you broke him, then he could do the kindergarten in school and not even be behind at all. That's great.
And maybe even be a little bit ahead. So that was kind of the deal that we made. And after that year, he was the biggest homeschool advocate. He is a huge fan. And so I always giggle because he says, we homeschool. And I think, oh, we homeschool. You know, there's a lot. But he's a great dad that way. And it's a mindset, right? That we're always learning together. He's always teaching just constantly to his son. So we've been really, really happy with our experience.
And I hear that a lot. And probably even in our household, it's typically the moms that want to homeschool and the dads are like, whoa. I want my kid in the typical sports and the typical, you know, homecoming and prom and stuff. And like, I don't want them to be weird. Like, we're not going to start sewing bonnets and, you know, like clothes and, you know, so why do you think that is in your experience that the dads are so hesitant of it? Just because it's out of the realm, like the norm?
Yeah, I think for him, he'd never seen a homeschooling family per se. I mean, we'd known of a few, but he kind of said, will you really do it? Will you really stick with this? You know, of like, it's a commitment. And are we really ready to commit to that as a family? But as you go through, like, how is he going to learn how to stand in a line? And how is he going to learn, you know, all of those things? And then stepping back and realizing, well, how important are all of those things really? And seeing how we could tailor specific to his needs was just, it's just such a game changer. So,
yeah, that's funny that you say that. Does he need to know how to stand in a line? I mean, when you look at kind of, we've had a couple of podcasts on the history of education and what the education system is really set out to do behind the scenes. And it's like, yes, the rule follower, stand in your line, be quiet, da da da.
Totally.
How has the journey been with your son, especially as an only child? Because I know a lot of homeschooling families, it's like, well, we've got five or six kids. And, you know, so the socialization isn't that big of a worry because they all have each other. But for one child, how did you see him kind of progress?
Yeah, so as most people say, homeschooling children are as weird as their parents, you know. And I found that, you know, for me being in school, they're only actually socialized to be in groups of their peers of their same age. They're actually not socialized to know how to deal with younger children, how to talk to older children and feel comfortable around adults. People are always really surprised that my son, adults will be like, wait, he's actually talking to me. He actually asked me a question. They're not used to where my son, where he's an only child, was always around adults. And so he's very comfortable around adults. He's very comfortable in those conversations. And so that was a huge benefit. But, you know, we have lots of community, homeschooling community around here, and we tried a lot. I started a PE co-op. I started right after COVID with a friend, a crafting and PE co-op while everyone was worried about COVID. But we've never really clicked. We've never really found something that worked really well. And mostly because my son has the three Ds. So he's dyslexic, he has dysgraphia and dyscalculia. And so, which is the math version and the writing version. And so it was really hard to find something that where he could learn his way. Plus we spent, you know, without a lot of reading, without a lot of worksheets, you know, even within our co-ops. And there were a lot of good options, but still they'd have you read and they'd have you do things, which was hard for him. And also we just had to spend so much time remediating him and his reading. We had speech and language therapy. We had OT, physical therapy. We had all these appointments all the time. And so it was really, really hard. You know, I've gone through five different reading curriculums, and it's just led me to actually become a dyslexia therapist myself, wow. Get into some certification programs. And then that has led me to go back to speech and language pathology grad program. So the dyslexia has really led us on this path that has actually kind of led us from homeschooling. So this year he started school in sixth grade, but it's been a real blessing for us because it's helped me to realize that I still feel 100% responsible for his school. I know exactly where he is, what's going on. We have to spend a lot of time after school, but you know, Fridays are virtual days. But we found a really good fit in our community, and it's been really good because it's given him more structure that I was never able to give him with someone with ADHD. Mm-hmm. It's taught him some more resilience because he cries and throws fits with mom, but he doesn't do that with his English teacher. He's taught him to advocate for himself, to recognize that I'm going to do the adapted math test and I can get a 94% on it where I was getting D's on a regular math test. So he's learning some skills that I have felt, and even my husband kind of fought me on putting him in school, but we've felt that for last year, it was a good fit. And for this year, I believe we're going in that direction again, but you know, eighth grade, we might pull him back out and I might homeschool him again. So it's just been kind of an interesting journey to go through, feel so strongly about homeschooling and then recognizing we needed something else. We needed something different, and to be open that and adjust it. And sorry, I get emotional and kind of mourn that someone else is teaching him and kind of mourn that I'm not, that he has needed someone. He's needed someone different than me, and I still tutor him, and I still help him. You know, all of that, but that this was a good fit for him. That's actually kind of hard to come to, and you mourn it a little bit. So,
yeah, I've talked on the podcast before about mourning this traditional experience of elementary school, middle school, and high school for our kid when we decide that we want to homeschool, because it's so ingrained in us that, you know, the little Halloween parades and, you know, Christmas parades and their concerts and field trips and homecoming and football games, you know, if they want to be on the lacrosse team, volleyball team, baseball, whatever. And it's this adjustment to, okay, there are other ways that our kids can still partake in that. it's just you're mourning this traditional way of most of the people that you know do it. We did it ourselves, and adjusting to, well, okay, maybe it's not a big homecoming game and dance, but there are dances that homeschool people do, or your child just gets invited to one of those dances through, you know, a date, you know, especially proms. A lot of the homeschool kids I talk to, they're like, well, no, I was invited to prom. Some just didn't want to go, and others, you know, at least they had the option to it. And the football games and stuff like that. I mean, there are teams that are not school affiliated. So I definitely see where you're coming from now that you've had that mourning period that you wanted to get, you know, try something different than the traditional way. And now you fell in love with the homeschooling and the bonding with him. And now you're mourning that like closeness and giving up your sort of like being that number one influencer in his life. But what I'm taking away from what you're saying is that a lot of parents, I think, would think to themselves, oh, I failed because I put him back into school. And it is so important that people understand that is not a failure. You are taking the high road to say, I want to give him this opportunity now. And down the road, you don't know what's coming, but this is good for him right now. And it's a sacrifice to you, where a lot of us on the other side, like, what should we do? Should we quit our job and put our, you know, homeschool our kids? That's a sacrifice too. And so it's like both sides, you know, we look at you getting so emotional on, you know, putting him into the system because that is what is best for him right now. And it's because you fell in love with the homeschooling journey, and, you know, and it's nice that you had that because now you can do all the extra tutoring with him. Could you talk a little bit about dyslexia and the other two big words that you said that I don't know because I went to public school? And what, like, I know dyslexia is like you're reading it, the word comes through opposite or something, but pretend I don't know anything about it, which I probably really don't.
Yeah, no, it's, I didn't know.
And how they, how you figured out was a good way for him to learn. Because a lot of parents probably, you know, have this situation or at least need to be able to recognize it in their children.
Yes, 100%. Because dyslexia is 1 in 5. So for me, it's not really a disability. It's just a different brain. It's a different way to learn.
And it's like being left-handed.
Yes, And so do we adjust? We don't really adjust very much for left-handers, right? But it's just understanding, too, that they have amazing brains. So dyslexia is the MIT disease is what they call it, because MIT they're out-of-box thinkers, and they recruit. In fact, LinkedIn is working on getting dyslexic thinking as a trait that you put on with LinkedIn, because they can't figure out how to fit into the box. And so they are great with engineering and architecture and art and anything that makes them think in different ways than the average brain. So, but reading and writing and all of this can just be very, very difficult. Dysgraphia is handwriting and getting your thoughts down onto paper, versus dyslexia is the reading. And dyscalculia is then the math side, where they don't understand quantities. And so telling time is hard. Figuring out how much time has gone past is hard. Even my son was in second grade, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. So I did a mom school with numbers, with fake money. I mean, it looked like real money, but he would earn rewards, and then, because he had a hard time counting, even in second grade, he could count to 20, he could count to 100, but he could not count things to 20. So it's like, it was just really, really difficult. But with the dyslexia, I just knew right away. He could, at 2 and 3, I think we read Goodnight Moon twice to him, and he could tell it back to you verbatim. But he could not learn his letter names. It took forever for him to be able to know those letter names. And he couldn't rhyme. And it's like, what do you do when your kid can't rhyme yet? Can you teach a kid how to rhyme? It was just odd. And just a few things like that. And so, you know, we'd be in scripture reading, and he could read savior and knowledge and redeemer and all these big words. But if you pointed to A-N, He's like, just tell me what that word is, Mom. I don't know what that is.
Oh, wow.
Because he could memorize like the shape of a word and could kind of guess. So knowledge is pretty distinct looking. So he just memorized that. But an A and all of those, you know, the typical P's and B's and Q's, they just looked really similar to him. And so it was hard. So we did some online screening and I waited in the forever long line for the neuropsychologist and all of that. So that's kind of how it started. And the typical reading programs, like everyone loves The Good and the Beautiful. I hated the Good and the Beautiful. We just couldn't do it. You know, it just is so much word and so much verbiage. And that was just really hard. And he does have a language disorder as well. And so that can happen. And so we just, it was just lots of years. So I tried every Orton Gillingham program, Nessie and Blast Off to Reading and All About Reading, and did all of the things that even for dyslexics, they say were helpful. And it just was not helping. And so I thought, well, it must be me. So I went and got Orton Gillingham trained, you know, I got a certification through them, and that still wasn't working. And so I just had to keep fighting and keep looking. And so I came upon speech to print, and that's kind of where I've landed. So
speech to print. Okay. I haven't heard of that mm-hmm. one. Is that one that would be good for children who are not dyslexic too?
As well. Yes. So it's just comes from a point of view of our brains are wired for speech. So anyone who can speak can read is the idea. So instead of teaching that A says A, because a letter doesn't really say anything, you know,
mm-hmm.
instead of saying A says A, and then halfway through kindergarten, you're introducing, well, A actually says A as well. And then 6 months later, you're saying, well, and it also can say like about, and it also can say like father. You introduce from speech. So you say E, the sound E that we say, these are the top six ways we can spell E. It can be EE, EA, Y, I. And so you approach from speech. You approach reading from and understanding from the speech point of view. And so it's a lot quicker than an Orton Gillingham program. It's more efficient. And there's a lot of the neuroscience being brought into those programs, not worrying about teaching so many rules that have, you know, I before E, except after C, you know, and all of those things that have way more exceptions than they follow the rule. So yeah. It's been absolutely fantastic. And my son has, you know, in nine hours of instruction has come up three grade levels in his spelling. Because it's just teaching the brain how to notice patterns and to see the code, see the letters or see our reading as a code that your brain has to figure out. So it's been fantastic. I'm super grateful for it.
Hey friends, thank you for checking out this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you haven't already, please check out episode 24 with Connor Boyack, author of the Tuttle Twins book series. As you guys know, if you listen to me regularly, I have been reading those books well before I became a podcast host. I read them with my son. He just turned 5. Check out my link, thehomeschoolhowto.com/Tuttle. That's how they will know I sent you, so I can get a little bit of credit, and then you get credit when you put in promo code Cheryl40. That is CHERYL40. Get 40% off book series for ages 5 through 11. These books are so awesome because they talk about real life scenarios about democracy, government, our liberties, and our freedoms. Things that we are not taught in the school system. And of course, why would a school system run by the government tell us that the government might not be all great for us? So please check out thehomeschoolhowto.com/Tuttle and use promo code Cheryl40. You can get the link and the code in my show's description. So give me the name of that again, and I will put it in our show notes for anyone that wants to go back and look.
Okay, so structured linguistic literacy is kind of the umbrella term for some of these programs. And I am certified in EBLI, and I started with Reading Simplified as well. So I'm happy. People can always reach out to me. I'm really happy to talk about those things and give suggestions. but it has been fantastic. And there's the, in fact, in Boise next week or tomorrow, we're doing The Truth About Reading is a documentary about our schools and how, I don't know if people know, 32% of our fourth graders are literate or are at grade level. And so it's just a documentary about the truth about reading. And EBLI, the program that I do, it's EBLI, EBLI, evidence-based learning instruction, is featured in that film of adults that are, you know, illiterate, like functionally illiterate, and have been taught to read, and just how it has changed their worlds. So,
and the program, what was the program actually? I feel like you said a different name in the beginning.
Speech to Print.
Mm-hmm. Speech to Print. Okay. Uh-huh. So, I am going to put, and also I'll have you give me whatever contact mm-hmm. info for yourself, and I'll put that in the show notes too, so that people yeah. can reach out to you.
Yes.
Now, so The Truth About Reading, I watched all of the Truth About Cancers. Does it kind of, is oh, that kind of the gist they were going to with this? Like, let me tell you, or did it just happen to be a similar title?
No, I haven't seen those, but yeah, this is just the truth of, you know, a Louisiana study showed that 66% of inmates are illiterate, or I mean, are dyslexic. Wow. You know, and just very high rates. And how is that affecting our society? And, you know, I'm conservative and I wanted to make a difference. And so I just decided it's time to teach kids to read. It's time. That's my civil disobedience, is to go out and teach as many people to read as possible so that they can understand what's really going on in our country and that they're not only reliant on TikTok for information. And so that's kind of where it's gone for me. Just so important to understand. And, you know, homeschooling parents, sometimes we can tend, a lot of homeschooling families will think that dyslexia isn't really a thing, you know?
And no, I thought it was reading from like the right side of the page to the left.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That clearly isn't what it is.
Yeah, I know.
Now that you've explained in such detail, I'm like, wow, I was really off the bat on that one.
No, the same with my own son. And so there are people, if your child is struggling, you know, sometimes we're like, well, we'll just wait till they're a little bit older. There's a difference between not being interested in reading, but also not being able to do it. And so there are resources, and I'm part of Decoding Dyslexia has a chapter in every state and can help you with resources. And there's just lots out there. So I just want to bring up that awareness within the homeschooling community that it is a struggle, because for so long people would just tell me, oh, you need to try this, or it's something wrong with me, where it was true, you know, a diagnosis, there was something there that I needed to address. So,
okay. Two questions. Can anybody find The Truth About Reading documentary like online and watch it?
Just the trailer at this point. They're doing screenings throughout the country. Uh-huh. And then it will be towards the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So we, through Decoding Dyslexia, we have the superintendent of public education here in Idaho coming, with a local university, all collaborating to come together to start changing our, as homeschoolers, we don't know, because we don't have outdated curriculums that are used. You know, there, it's called like 3Q-ing, where you cover up the words and you have the kids guess what the word would be by looking at the picture and looking at context words and things like that. And that's been really solidly in our curriculums in across the whole United States in schools. But we didn't know that. That's not how we were taught to read. And so it's been a big fight to get structured literacy into schools. And to teach reading properly. And it's called The Reading Wars. And so this documentary is kind of about how the subliteracy really affects adults. So it'll be out soon and people can watch it.
And do you think that we've been teaching it incorrectly in school since the beginning, or did it have a better way? And then policies and funding went into, you know, here, try this. Yeah. My golf buddy's got a new program and, you know, let's invest many state and federal dollars into that. Or, you know, if you're familiar with John Taylor Gatto, this is to dumb us down. Let's do this approach so that they 100%. Do have a hard time and struggle.
It became a political thing 100%. Sold a Story is an amazing podcast that had like 6 episodes that talked about it. But it became a Republican thing to want to teach phonics. Okay. And so you have a very, you know, one way leaning education system. And so we had phonics, but phonics can feel boring to the teacher. And so it was kind of, this is boring. And, you know, it needed to be more than phonics, which is true. You need to, you know, expand and get into vocabulary and all of those things. They wanted it to be, we want kids to enjoy reading. So it became, you know, it switched one way, but it's been very, very strongly in our schools for 30 years, at least.
Yeah, so, I know for myself, like
political.
I want to love to read. And when I get, you know, a good book and the time to read and, you know, without distractions, I do love it. Yeah. But I'm not a fast reader. And a lot of times you'll read a paragraph and I'll have to go back and like read it again because I don't know if my mind was somewhere else. But there's got to be little tips and tricks that to, you know, figure out a better way to even retain what you're reading and that sort of thing. I wonder if that's all stemmed from the beginning. So my son is 4. He'll be 5 in 2 months and we'll be starting a kindergarten curriculum. What is your recommendation for what I should use for him? Because we're at that stage of, you know, trying to get him familiar with the letters.
Yes. So my first recommendation, we did teach your child to read in 100 easy lessons. I don't know if you've heard of that before. That's a very typical... you sit down with your child for about 20 minutes a day, and teach them. That's very good. It teaches like the alphabetic principle. It teaches a lot of good ways, but even for now, if you go to Ebly, they have amazing apps and it's $5 for an app. And there are children who are learning to read on that app alone because it teaches them and it has explicit handwriting instruction right involved. They have to make the letters correctly or it doesn't let them pass on. But saying the sounds and things like that, that is a fantastic way to get them started. And especially in kindergarten, just, you know, lots of books and audiobooks and the fMRI's research is coming out and saying that as far as the language pathways of our brain, it doesn't matter if you're reading or if you're audiobooks. So,
that's fantastic.
It's fantastic. Yes. And that's my son. So when we got him reevaluated, because you have to do it every 3 years with a neuropsychologist this last year, he has college level vocabulary and auditory processing kind of skills. And it's those audiobooks. He had them. I knew that he was having a hard time accessing knowledge through reading. And so he had unlimited 6 to 8 hours a day of audiobooks, you know, and, so he has these college level vocabulary words, but he, as a 6th grader, had 2nd grade, like actual, like word decoding type skills. And so that makes his reading comprehension actually above grade level because he can kind of guess what's going on in the story because of his high vocabulary and his being homeschooled. He had that like fountain of knowledge that he's able to pull from. And so that's something that I would always say with families, just access as much language as possible.
Yeah. Just recently I started turning off the TV when he watches eats his breakfast because he does go to preschool right now for 3 mornings a week. And having the baby here too, it's just kind of like, okay, here's your food. You watch something on the TV and I'm going to go shower or feed her or whatever. And just recently I was like, let's just open a book instead. I'll just read to you, show you the pages. And then it's me working around. Okay, we'll pick a different time of the day to shower because you don't really want him sitting alone by himself in the morning to his own devices, watching TV and, you know.
Oh, it's so hard.
So, yeah, it's just making these little switches. Reading doesn't always have to be at nighttime before bed, or it can be both.
Yeah.
And then if we only have time to read one book for bed, I don't feel as bad because it's like, well, we read a little one this morning, so it didn't have to, you know, it doesn't have to be like three books all at once, even though that's when he wants to read, because that means that he gets to stay up, you know, later. As long as someone's reading to me, I can stay awake. But yeah, just these little things of, all right, let's switch this behavior and add another one. Is there an age that you feel a child should read by? Because I know, especially with the homeschooling, there's parents that do the unschooling approach, and you know, that's wonderful. And they're like, my children will learn when they have the interest and they're ready, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. Then there's other ones like with doing like a Becca per se. And it's like kindergarten is rigid, rigid, rigid. And, you know, I assume they're like reading the dictionary by the end of the Becca year. But what do you think?
I think so. All I know is dyslexia can be diagnosed with 90% accuracy by 4.5. And how they do that is they actually test what's called your rapid automatic naming. So it's like how fast you can name objects in a row. And so for me, you know, learning to read and all of that can, there's preschoolers learning to read through Montessori programs. I definitely think you don't push a child. I know for me, teach your child to read, that was our first step. I put it away for 6 months and came back, and he was finally ready, right? Mm-hmm. So he is now at 12 years old starting to draw and color and paint. You know, I was like, oh, I need to be the good homeschooler and do crafts. And he didn't care about it at all. So for me, it's not a matter of when, if you are truly following their interest, as much as there are some screenings that you can do that you can just rule out the fact that they might, that it might be a dyslexia. It might be a struggle, if that makes sense. Because for sure, my son wasn't ready early on. And so if you're trying to push and push and push too soon, where my cousin that homeschools, she had three boys, and all of a sudden she's got her first daughter that's learning to read. And she's like, she just sits there and teaches herself. It's amazing. Like, it's just so different, you know, so different for each child. And she loves writing and she loves all of that stuff. She is just ready at kindergarten to do that. Wow. And it's, you know, so each child will be different, but I am a huge advocate that if they're fighting you, is it because, you know, they are dyslexic or they're needing to learn in a different way? So yeah, you can pull off of it if it's becoming a fight and a struggle, but just ruling that out would be helpful. So
perfect. Yeah, because you don't want them to lose interest altogether. You want them to have a fond experience of it so that they want to continue to read. But yeah, that makes total sense. Make sure that they don't have any sort of obstacles in the way. It's just a matter of timing. Perfect. So what are...
You can still have audiobooks. You can still be, you know, you can still be reading to them. Sometimes it's actually really hard to find time to read to your child, which seems silly, but it's true. So there's like Epic is an app that has read to you. So the child can be reading along and it's highlighting the words as they go, for example. So there are apps that you can do that they can be accessing language as much as possible, even though they're not reading. And that's what's great about homeschooling is you can read about science books, you can read history books, and just be accessing that language. So
now, okay, so that's a great segue into this. Epic is a read to you. It's an app. Can they do it on like their iPad or a laptop? Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. They have in schools?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you can sign up for yourself as well.
So have you heard anything about sort of the government involvement on maybe some of these platforms that we as homeschooling parents say, like, well, let's use this, just say Epic for now. And I'm not sitting there because if this is your time to, you know, read on your screen, maybe this isn't the time that I shower. And then parents saying things like, oh, the government was either, or whoever was sneaking into, a woman on my last podcast said some of them led to pornography when you're not paying attention.
The ads
in them. That's what it is. Okay. Or like a tracking system, which this could be completely like tinfoil hat. But a tracking system on, you know, that's why some of the homeschooling, the new age ones are going virtual because it is a better way actually for the government to track. And I don't know what are the purposes for tracking, if it's nefarious or if it's actual, like, we just want to see the progress being made, you know, I guess that's up to the parents to decide. But is that truthful? Is that really happening? And what should we be on the lookout for? Do you know?
You have to remember that a lot of companies, so now Khan Academy, I know someone who is actually beta testing some of their new stuff, and a lot of controversial topics are being introduced into these books, because to get funding, you do have to have a certain amount of climate science and a certain amount of other controversial topics within your programs. So that is true. And you just have to be very, very vigilant with that, unfortunately. So I'm not super familiar with a lot of those, but I do know, for example, that my college program, my professors can know if I watched lectures that they've put up, how many minutes I've been spending on things. And they know a lot how much time I'm taking on writing assignments and things like that if I'm within the platform. And so those capabilities are there. So we do have to be vigilant, I think, as homeschoolers, to be careful of how it will encroach. And, you know, from what I've seen of the education system, you know, the people actually doing the work don't have nefarious things and it seem intentions, but you just never know, you know, how that can then be utilized and say, okay, I'll let you homeschool in your state now, but you are going to have to prove that your child is on this program 3 hours a day, you know, or things like that. So we do need to be vigilant, I think.
Right. And that's where probably paying attention to the laws and things that are getting passed, which, you know, is something that I'm excited to work with my son on, because I don't know any of that myself, but it almost feels like it's going to be too late at that point. I need to know it now and start, you know, discussing it and making a difference. So in Idaho, you guys have a little bit more of a laxed reporting system than like myself in New York, where we have to say what our intentions are to teach throughout the year. And then every 3 months, write what we did teach. Tell us a little bit, for anyone that missed, when I talked to Katie, who, you know, in the curriculum episode, I think that was number three. Episode three. What are your reporting requirements in Idaho?
So in Idaho, we don't have reporting requirements.
Okay. Well,
we're
easy
very,
enough.
Very flexible. Yes. And, but we have to be careful that that doesn't change. But I feel really lucky in Idaho because we do have a program that is an online charter program that you homeschool and you then can receive funding. And I know it's available in like Michigan and Texas, and several states have these programs, but, you get funding per child to spend on curriculums or, piano lessons or things like that. And within that, then we do have reporting. So for example, you know, I didn't do it this year, but last year was every other week you would have to take a picture of what you did, or the child saying what they learned that week. It could be something as flexible as that. But we did have kind of that reporting system, and they were required to take the testing. So for me, I was more lax. There's a lot of people who are very against that program, and we can start fights here within our homeschooling community, because they feel like the government is then, you know, encroaching, which we do have to be careful that it's not a slippery slope, that they don't become, you know, that the state doesn't then come in and start saying, well, you know, we're going to make all homeschoolers do this program, you know, so it's a thing. But I also thought it's a fabulous program for families getting thousands of dollars every year to pay for these curriculums and can pay for tutoring and can pay for those things. So,
right, especially with what we pay in school taxes. And if you're not sending your kid there, it's maybe just a little bit back to you to get to. I understand both sides. I don't know if we have that in New York or not, but I do understand both sides of it. You know, it'd be nice to get some of that money back and get to use it for our homeschooling curriculums and extracurriculars and tutors. But yeah, what is it going to be like? And I always say, like, Facebook is such a great, I don't know if it's, you know, bait the, I don't know, drag the carrot. There's a saying, but you know, where it's, this is great. You can connect with, you know, when it first came out, you can connect with your old friends and places to put pictures of your kids so that in every year we show you your memories from last year. And it's such a great idea. And then you got like affairs happening because your husband's meeting his prom queen from high school. and then, oh, look it, we tracked your children. Now the pedophiles are in there and they're getting pictures of your kids, and now the government's saying, well, we don't like what you're saying, so we're just going to delete your account, and who knows what else they're tracking, because I know, you know, after 9/11, all of the security laws just, you know, went out the window, so they can track us. Ancestry is the same way, and I've done it. I've done Ancestry.com, but hey, send us your DNA. We'll tell you who, you know, your long-lost relatives are, but now we have all your DNA, too, so, you know. Yes. Whatever they're doing with that, I don't know, but
yes. Well, and unfortunately with our school system, you know, I've heard you talk about Tuttle twins, and you know, there's so many things that it's important for us to teach our kids to be vigilant of these things as well, you know, mm-hmm. as they're growing older, and how that can always be a possibility. But luckily, I believe that the trend is actually going in the other direction. I think there's so many families that COVID opened up, you know, the possibility to homeschooling opened up some of these cracks that we had of the current system. And I'm hopeful that lots of possibilities can come from that.
Hi friends, I want to thank you once again for tuning in. If you'd like to leave a tip for the show, I do have a link in my show's description that goes directly to my PayPal. Send a cup of coffee, a dollar or two, just to cover costs of the monthly maintenance. That is amazing. And if you can't, but you can share it with a friend or maybe to your favorite homeschool group Facebook page, or even leave a review for me on Apple Podcasts, that would be so awesome too. I want to keep this show going. I've been learning so much. I hope you've been learning right along with me.
And that we as a homeschooling community can be open and help create these possibilities, whether they're pods or whether they're, you know, I know there's a program over in the Boise area here in Idaho that, you know, you have Tuesday morning, you can go Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday mornings and learn English and math, or you can go, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, science and history, or you can do Monday electives or Friday electives, or you can do all of them, you know? And so there's all these really cool programs starting to come out. And I'm grateful for that there's just going to be lots of options for people. And I'm hoping that this trend keeps going in that great way.
Yeah. And there is something called a private membership association, a PMA, and then within that, a PEA, Private Education Association. And I urge parents to look into that. And I've been trying to learn more about it myself, but there are these things in the law that they don't want even our lawyers to know about. Like, it's just like it was kind of tucked away in the law books. But they're rights that we have where, to the best of my knowledge, you know, a private membership association is like, if you wanted to run a business and you don't, you kind of have your own laws that you run by. You don't have to go by, say, either state or federal or both those laws. You sign on members. So if someone wanted to buy your produce, you know, they become a member for, I don't know if it's $1 a month or whatnot. And they're your stakeholders. It's not, you know, you have your own rights. And within that is the Private Education Association. So I've thought about that too, is if down the line I were to create something, it's important going in, knowing all the rights that we have. And so if anybody has information on that listening, contact me, thehomeschoolhowto@gmail.com or through Facebook or Instagram at the Homeschool How To Podcast, because I would love to know more about this. I've only seen one YouTube video, and that's what they did. They were had like a little grocery store. But I'd love to hear how it works on the education level, because I think, you know, learning more of our rights is important. And we can't even blame our lawyers, because it's just like the doctors. They're only getting taught what they're getting taught in school. You know, there's so much more in the books that nobody's, you know, actually flipping through those pages and interpreting what those laws mean. So that's super important. Have you, what sort of differences have you seen in your son from homeschooling to now going to the traditional school?
Yes. So he is a lot more confident. I think he was afraid of how he would compare in the school. Yeah. He was very nervous at first and all of that. So it has increased his confidence that he's capable of going. It's not so scary, you know. Mm-hmm. Our charter school that I found has, you know, it's they memorize the founding fathers. They're even through high school that early the homeroom is memorizing poems and classic songs that teach about resilience and grit and integrity and honesty. And also he has his teachers on virtual day on Friday. He can go in for help at any time. He has a mentor teacher that will stay with him all the way through his graduation of high school if we stay with the program. They have Harry Potter houses. And the house names are the founding fathers. So it's, you know, he's in the James Madison House of Justice, right? And so there's just a lot of good programs out there, and to not be afraid to open up to what the possibilities could be. And he has, because of being a an only child and, you know, our particular circumstances, he has found like a group that he fits in. And that school feels like a bigger homeschool co-op. They're not very rigid. They're very laid back with things. It's a mastery-based program. He can take every test he needs to until he gets the grade that he wants. There's really good, positive things happening. Not just in homeschooling because of COVID, but in through a lot of different schools. And so I think we can ride this wave, and we as a homeschooling community, if we will unite, we can help bring some of these things about. And so it's been good for my son. It's also been hard because of his learning disabilities, and the social has been hard. It's been an adjustment, but he has adjusted, and he does want to go back next year. That's been part of the decision making, is he does, you know, they do have the option that I could homeschool him 2 days and he could go 2 days. So that's another option. Mm-hmm. And so he would have his same stuff. He'd just be doing it virtually at home and I could help him. And that would be my preference, but he actually doesn't want to. So he would rather go. So just, you know, and a reach out to all the moms out there, especially if you have struggling learners. I just had a conversation with a friend, and when you are crying every single day homeschooling, it's okay to reach out and find every homeschooling mom in February and March is like, why am I doing this? I think every teacher come May in the regular school system is also like, why do I do this? But if it's really, there are other options, and to not be afraid, and maybe they go for 1 year and then they come back home, or maybe you put them in and 2 months into it, you realize it's not the right option and you can bring them home. So there are options, and to not, you know, we have to fight so much with the homeschooling to stand up for ourselves, but to also recognize there are other options, if needed, if that becomes a need in our life. So.
Yeah, I think just hearing about all the different options there are out there helps people to know that it's not just public school or a Catholic school. I mean, around here, most of the private schools are Catholic schools. So then you leave a lot of people that are, you know, not of that denomination or, you know, not religious at all. You don't have an option. It's but okay. To know that these things are popping up or could possibly even just be created, it's there's more than one way, and it sounds like there's more than two or three or four ways. So it's just getting creative and getting the knowledge on what there could be and what you want for your kid. You know, everybody's going to want something different, whether you want your kid to, like, know how to grow food and that sort of stuff by the time they're 18, or, you know, run a business. There's so many different paths.
Well, I wish you luck with your journey. It's such, and when you recognize it's a journey, it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing.
It really is. And just trying to not put so much pressure on ourselves, like you were saying before with the arts and the crafts. And it's like, I don't really like arts and crafts. And, you know, my son will bring them home from preschool now. And I'm like, oh, are we going to have to do occasionally, you know, this or that maybe. But if he's not into it and I'm not into it, then we don't have to do it. Or you can just do it minimally. Or maybe he won't be into it, but my daughter might be. And then you kind of probably get a new appreciation for it once you see how excited they get over it. So
yes. Or you find a co-op that does all of that and pulls out the glitter, and you don't have the glitter at your house.
Exactly. I was just going to say, right now he just likes throwing glitter all over the house. So
Yes.
Totally. So then you find a co-op to do that. And that is, we do have one around here. And yeah, I was like, well, I can teach Zumba. If somebody else wants to cover the arts and crafts, that would be great.
It's really true. And just recognizing, too, that, like, you know, even for me, I went through the system and there's a lot of things I didn't. I still remember thinking, I have a bachelor's degree and I can't tell you if the sun rises in the west or the east, you know? And so just recognizing they're going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And they, you know, having, I liked one of your last podcast interviewees was talking about the light in their eyes, right? And as long as you, as long as they love learning and they love, have that, and you don't squash that, then there's so, the possibilities are endless for these kids. And it's the same with kids with learning disabilities. We can get them help and we can, help them work within their strengths. You know, we've got a 3D printer over the last weekend and he's just been going crazy, my son, with 3D printing. And so the possibilities are endless. So we're really lucky.
Yeah. I think it's take the pressure off. And like you said, there's so many things that you wouldn't even remember. Like right now, okay, should we be out in nature watching the robins build their nests? And like, I showed him a video on it on YouTube. But it's not that he's going to remember that specific thing when he's in his 20s. However, he's exposed to it, and that's the important part. It's not necessarily that we've retained everything in our, you know, 13 plus years of schooling. It's just kind of everything builds a little bit on each other. So I think a lot of parents getting into this homeschooling realm just don't know if we can handle it. But think about, you know, the schools having 30 kids in a classroom and a teacher that's overworked, and, you know, you can make it what your child needs it.
Yes, absolutely. And if they are interested in it, their brain will remember it. Right. And so if they're interested and learning in a way that that's interesting to them, then they'll thrive. And so homeschooling is, I'm such a fan. But you can, even with, I would encourage people whose kids are in schools, you can still audiobooks on all of your car drives and talk about history. You can still be doing the Junior Ranger programs when you go camping. You know, it's more of a mindset. It's how you approach the world, that you're in charge and responsible for the upbringing of your child. And I'm a mama bear. No one can tell me how to teach my son. I know how to teach my son. So, and just ensuring that they have the values instilled in them that you have found important, and teach them to think critically and all of those things, no matter where your child is, as far as at home or at school. So
amazing. Well, so for anyone listening, check out the show notes. I will put everything we kind of talked about with those curriculums and some links in there, and your contact information if anyone does want to reach out to you if their child's in a similar situation and they have questions for you. So Liz, thank you so much for being here today. This was delightful.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for your time.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you've enjoyed what you heard and you'd like to contribute to the show, please consider leaving a small tip using the link in my show's description. Or, if you'd rather, please use the link in the description to share this podcast with a friend or on your favorite homeschool group Facebook page. Any effort to help us keep the podcast going is greatly appreciated. Thank you for tuning in and for your love of the next generation.